Welcome back to the Mom Mentality Show. I'm Austin, this is Chris, and we're really excited to have Jeff Patterson with us today. I got some really awesome topics, and I've been privileged to even mob with him today, so I'm really looking forward to this. Jeff, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I live in Portland, I work at Jalma Software, and I host monthly mob programming workshops for Agile PDX, building community around mob programming, promoting rapid knowledge transfer, and mostly just having a good time every second Tuesday of every month. And that's pretty much it. I also play the piano. I'm really loving San Diego. The weather here is amazing. I have a room with a piano. Pretty much made a vacation out of it, so I'm pretty happy to be here.
Right on. Very good. And I guess that'll probably go right into our first topic. You want to talk about building community?
Yeah, sure. So I first learned about mob programming at a Global Day of Code retreat.
Oh, fantastic.
In 2016, it was hosted by Matt Plavkin. And we did one rotation using mob programming. Instantly fell in love with it. I was still in college at the time, actually. Yeah. And it was something that I really tried to bring back to my peers and the work groups that I was working in at college. And I just kept observing positive things about it. And I saw the power that it had to build better programmers, build better communicators. I just wanted to continue doing it and practicing it. Then when Willem Larsen started his mob programming workshop, I joined, and eventually Willem Larsen wanted to move on or had to move on, and he asked me to take over for him. And so I've been doing it ever since. That was almost exactly a year ago. So I took over for Willem last January, just celebrated my 1 year anniversary. We have a big group of regulars that attend almost every workshop, and then we always see new faces from all different backgrounds. It's really great. One of the things I really enjoy is introducing new mob programmers to mob programming.
Yeah.
Especially ones that are either still in college or working their way through code school, just introducing mob programming and then smuggling in some other things too, like test-driven development. Nice. Or the four simple rules of design. We focus on different things that make software better and make collaboration better. Mm-hmm. Every month. But yeah, just building a community is probably what feels the best about this whole thing. Mm-hmm.
So for people that are out there in other areas of the world and also wanting to do something similar, maybe what advice do you have for them around building community around mob programming? Like how are you reaching out to people? How are you getting them to participate? What's been successful? What's not been successful?
Oh, that's a lot. I mean, there've been, I'll start with the first thing, which is what's the advice. And that is, there are meetups that exist right now and there are people working in software. If you live in a community where there's software being developed, there's probably people meeting. Just start talking about it. That's pretty much what I did. And then, just being involved and not being afraid to have conversations and being really forthright and open with people and listening. Mm-hmm. And then, if you feel so compelled, Meetup is pretty easy to, start a meetup on, and finding a space can be hard. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate that, there was already a space that Willem had secured at the time, and I was able to actually move the workshop to where I work now. Mm-hmm. And they were very excited to have community exposure and provide that space. So if you have an employer that is willing to do that for you, then that's great. Take advantage of that resource. It's very lean. It doesn't cost us anything to have the workshop. I bring my own laptop in. It's just the cost of the electricity. Mm-hmm. While we have the lights on.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, things that work, things that that haven't worked so well. I mean, it's a constant learning process. So I try to always incorporate little mini check-ins and retros during the 2 hours. And, sure. you know, I find out from the people who attend what's working and not working. Mm-hmm. I've had days where my energy has been lower and days where my energy has been higher. I have some good helpers that are regular attendees. Two of them used to be school teachers, so they're really good at really, you know, they know how the workshop works and they're really good at helping to facilitate.
Nice.
My friend Matt, he actually kind of steps in as a co-facilitator in many ways, many times, especially around test-driven development. We have different experts who show up in different programming languages. So if we're working in JavaScript, you know, you have an expert that will help guide you through the maze of JavaScript or, you know, Python or whatever tool we're using. We just, you know, just taking advantage of people's resources and having shared learning happen and trying to encourage that almost always works. And then checking in and discovering how we can make little adjustments to make things better. Just, you know, that's how you discover what doesn't work for that particular night. And it changes every month. It really depends on how many people there are, what the level of expertise is, all kinds of different things.
Yeah, I find that really inspiring and cool when, because I think that feels like the traditional thing for a workshop or something like that is you get feedback afterwards for maybe the next time it happens. Like, oh, the conference next year, what can we do better? Or, you know, where if you're doing it throughout, that's really cool because then it's adapting while you're in the training. And I think that's awesome. Like, like we do that when we mob on real work, you know, but why not do that, you know, in the middle of the workshop as well. So that's great.
Yeah, and feedback after is great too. Like, I can't get enough. Like,
yeah.
We usually go for beers afterwards. There's a pub downstairs. Yeah. We go down and talk.
It's a retrospective afterwards.
We continue to talk about stuff, but we try to have fun too.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, nice.
But yeah, that pretty much sums it up. And I like for building the community part and getting the word out there. I mostly use social media and word of mouth.
Nice.
I tell people about it. I talk about it a lot to my friends and people I know in the industry, and just always keep bringing it up.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And people show up. So that's working for now.
Very cool. You mentioned facilitation. I know it's another topic up there. And so maybe it's a good time to move to... so I guess my first question is, how are these events organized and facilitated? You mentioned that you have people helping to facilitate. What does it look like for a typical one of these, I guess, 2-hour sessions?
Yeah, it's a 2-hour session. And I'm still trying to fine tune how it starts.
Yeah.
But usually I pick a really simple problem.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I've experimented with letting the group decide as a mob, which problem to pick from a backlog. I've tried to replicate different team structures at different ones. And, you know, to get the thing going quickly, though, it almost always works better if I have a pre-selected problem and a pre-selected language and a pre-selected test framework, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's value in letting the mob decide on those things, too. So that's a different learning experience and a different focus. So usually the workshop starts with just like a little socialization for a few minutes while people show up, and then a little talk. There might be people who are just don't know what mob programming is, but they're curious, and so I usually go over just the basics.
Yeah.
Not really in depth,
mm-hmm.
But just the basics. I cover TDD principles because I almost always enforce TDD when we work. It provides a handrail for us to really hold on to while we work through the problem.
Nice.
Yeah.
If you know that to focus on the test, focus on proving that a behavior doesn't exist or that the code is broken before you write the code, and then you write the code, it just provides this really nice process that guides the whole workshop. And then during the workshop, there's always this little, I compare it to the coefficient of friction when you try to drag an object from elementary physics, you know,
yeah.
that you have to pull a little bit harder than it would take to actually drag the object
yeah.
and go over this little hump of the coefficient of friction
yeah.
Before things really get started. And I see that happen every month where people are adjusting to working in this new way. And then once they figure it out, once they sort of like get into this group flow state, then things really start soaring. And it's usually around the same time that we start triangulating the proof of behavior with our tests.
Mm.
And that's a really powerful moment.
Yeah.
And it's really nice when that happens at, you know, at least halfway through the session.
Mm-hmm.
I've had workshops where it happens really late and people really get frustrated.
Yeah, so they have to leave all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah, people yeah, have yeah. to leave or we don't finish. So yeah, picking the right size problem is important.
Yeah, nice. Okay. Do you survey people for their skill levels or anything like that beforehand? Or how do you...
I do. Uh-huh. I mean, I always ask to see a show of hands for how many people have mock programmed before.
Okay.
I generally have conversations at the beginning to see like what people's experience is.
Mm-hmm.
But almost always we have people there that know enough to guide the rest of the group if there's you know, differences in expertise.
Yeah, right on.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So you talked about this idea of 2-hour transformations. You want to go into that a little bit? Yeah.
Well, I kind of hinted at it before. There's that first stage where people are adjusting. But I've witnessed this really interesting thing where when people first arrive, they're skeptical. They're there because out of curiosity, but they're also really skeptical of mob programming.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they kind of think it might be just like a trendy
fad,
you know, I don't know. But then by the end of the 2 hours, you see them really engaged and really enjoying it and super surprised about how much they enjoyed it and the benefits that they got out of it and how much learning they could compress into 2 hours. So, you know, you start with people not knowing keyboard shortcuts, and after 2 hours, they know how to get around IntelliJ or PyCharm or whatever tool we're using.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll take that with them when they leave. And I think that it's really powerful. Even if they don't ever mob again, or if they decide they hate mobbing, at least at least they've learned how to test well. They've learned how to use the tools well.
Yeah.
And they've instantly received knowledge from a group of experts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know? Definitely.
That's a little bit of why I like, you know, people going to conferences or giving talks or something where you can get like this outside opinion of how things should be,
mm-hmm.
and then internalize it and maybe take a little bit away from that. But these monthly meetups, all kinds of stuff in our industry have really a lot of value in that, getting a glimpse into what you don't know now and how you can find areas to grow. So I think that's just a really cool thing about our industry in general.
Yeah, and I also, it strikes me how much important trying it out and experimentation is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to armchair a lot of things, right? Say, oh, that doesn't sound good, but to actually try it out, you know, if there's a possibility it might be a good thing, and you can try it out and really know firsthand. And I've seen a lot of transformation, so to speak, just from the act of trying it, you know. I think that's great that these workshops give that people that opportunity, right? Because because it's a much scarier thing to try at your work. Like,
oh yeah,
hey, everybody who thinks this is a terrible idea, let's all do this on real work right now, you know, versus like a workshop on a toy problem, so to speak. But just even to try out the practice, you know, it can really give you courage to try another experiment. So.
Yeah, I can't emphasize enough that how safe these workshops are for people
to
try things. Like, there's no work
yeah.
you know, thing going to happen, no manager that's going to say you can't do that, or
yeah.
you can make a mistake and it's just a simple, you know, it's just FizzBuzz. Don't, you know, you yeah. don't need to worry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you can look at the interactions really closely that you're having
right.
and notice what works and what doesn't and learn a lot about yourself and how to listen and communicate. And I every workshop I'm learning too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I might be facilitating or providing the space, but I, you know, I learn just as much as my least experienced attendee.
Yeah, absolutely.
At every workshop, if not more.
And that might be a good tie into the next topic, which is mob virtues. I'm going to move that one over.
Yeah.
Because there's few things in life, and I feel like mobbing is one of them, that if you have interpersonal areas you need to work on, mobbing really brings it to the surface right yeah. away. You know, if I'm, and actually people talked to me about it, and it was really good feedback they gave me, you know, hey, you're interrupting people. You know what I mean? And if you have that tendency, you'll do it a lot in mobbing, you know, and it becomes very apparent, and it's a great growth opportunity. And I don't know if that's what you meant about mob virtues,
I mean,
but
that's part of it. For
you're right.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, just think, you know, like we talked this morning about Aristotle's virtues and
right.
how
yeah.
they're about finding a balance so you can have good character. And I think, in previous mob mentality shows, you've exposed some patterns in mobbing, and I think those hint at this too. But there are things that you could say generally work and don't work in mobbing, and mm-hmm. you know, and that they really start showing themselves when you start working. And I'm at a spot right now where I'm trying to explore what those are, and I can tell when I interrupt, I can feel it, and I can see expressions on people's faces, and I can see how it like changes the flow. It breaks the flow.
Right.
And there are other things too. I mean, in the RPG version of the mobster tool,
yeah.
You see that you get points for raising amplifying the voice of someone who is not being heard, or asking clarifying questions when you're a driver. I think these hint at virtues
right.
in mobbing. And I think they're worth taking a look at. Mm-hmm. But I'm still exploring what those are.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to know more. I don't want to hear what you have to say.
Some mob virtues. Yeah. So, I mean, we've talked about them before in the show. So kindness, consideration, respect. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think basically, because we were geeking out on philosophy this morning, right? And I mm-hmm. think mobbing is almost kind of like the classical Socratic discussion, right? And in a lot of ways, but it's about code yeah. as opposed to about, you know, what is virtue or something like that.
Right.
And for those conversations to go well, you need kindness, you need consideration, you respect.
Yeah. Safety in general.
Safety in general. I mean, and one of the things Socrates was good at showing was when people weren't really open-minded. They had their view, and, you know, so mm-hmm. for code, we're going to do this no matter what, and I'm going to plow through this, and you're along for the ride to get out of the way. Mm-hmm. Or people who are really open-minded, you know, well, I'm thinking this, but do you guys have a better idea? You know, and so I think just a lot of the basic human virtues that Aristotle talks about are a prerequisite for good human interactions, including mobbing, so...
Okay.
I don't know. That's my first reaction to the situation.
That's deep. And you want to be nice to people as you, like, you also want to, you know, practice the Socratic method, but not make the people that you're practicing that with
sure.
want to do what they did to Socrates. the kindness, consideration, respect is like a big thing. But I think also just a couple of other things, you know, kind of taking a step back from like the deep philosophy. Two things that I really like talking to people about are one, there's a book called The Four Agreements that has the always be impeccable with your word, never take anything personally, and so on and so forth. And then there's also expedition behavior, which is like software development is going to be like an expedition in the sense that it's going to be something that we're doing together. It's going to be hard, and there are time pressures on us, and so there's like a group of kind of 11 to 15 principles that are basically things like maintain a sense of humor, help people out but don't routinely do their work for them, and all those things that I think are, from just a day-to-day philosophy standpoint, good practices for like interpersonal social side of things. But yeah, you still need to be able to give people critical feedback, and that's the psychological safety piece.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one thing that Aristotle talked about was habits. I don't know, that's one part of his kind of mob virtues that speak out to me a lot. And I think, like a one-time meeting, it's easy to mess up in the moment. You know, you come up to bat, you say the wrong thing, whatever. But in a mob, it can really help you form better habits, right? Mm-hmm. So I've asked mob members before, hey, every time I do this, tell me. So,
yeah.
You know, every time I'm doing this thing I'm trying to get better at, tell me. And then they're like a constant reminder there until you can form the better habit. And so I think one really cool thing about mobbing is if you're doing it full time or doing it often, is it's kind of a built-in habit trainer, you know, because you have people around you who care about you wanting to help you get better. And so I think that's another thing that ties into mob virtues. I don't know. Do you have any original thoughts on that?
I think so. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about willingness being a key.
Willingness,
To mobbing.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, at work I've experienced things where people are curious about mobbing, but then when I get strict about the driver navigator pattern, things start going crazy because people aren't willing to conform to that strictness.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's kind of the entry point that you have to kind of like work through before you arrive at the valley of the benefit of mob programming, you know?
Yeah.
So I think willingness might be an addition to the kindness, consideration, respect, and openness,
openness
that you mentioned before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also, you know, there's that whole like shuhari kind of like practicing the basics sort of thing. And I think Austin talks about this a lot, but one key thing is you know, you can soften, you can make people more willing, I think, if you talk about it in that format too. So like, if just as a thought, if I had somebody that was like, I really hate doing the strict driver navigator style stuff, and it's like, oh well, you know, once we just get good at this sort of handoff, it's practicing the handoff of going from driver to navigator and so on, and then and so you can frame it actually in a way. So you know, I think that willingness is a virtue that probably goes along with mob programming, but I think there are ways to increase willingness like as you go. And so framing something in a shuhari sort of paradigm for practice, intentional practice, could be a really good way of saying like, hey, we can get away from this, but maybe we should start here. That could be a good pitch, right?
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of like the wax on, wax off. We're gonna do this for a while. You won't need it. You won't need the prescriptive stuff.
Yeah.
You may not need it. You may need to bring it back at times. And
yeah.
And we were kind of talking about that today when we're mobbing, right? We're talking about Jay's different levels of mobbing.
Mm.
And he jumped into a mob where we were experimenting with different ways of doing it. So we were, I think, one way we call this more is multi-threaded mobbing, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there was more than one thing going on in the mob at that time. And it was something we're experimenting with and we were reflecting on afterwards. But if someone was new to mobbing, you wouldn't necessarily do that, you know, having multiple navigators or a pair splitting off to go do something while another pair, you know, sticks on that. And so I think
there's an evolution to the practice.
Yes. Yeah.
So but the starting point seems to be the driver navigator pattern.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And if you can evolve and grow your relationships in your team to where you can experiment and do well these other patterns, then I think that's great. But if you start losing your way, that it seems like the driver navigator pattern is the grounding point.
It is, yeah.
That you can always fall back to.
Yes.
Until you get your bearings again.
Yeah.
And then experiment out again.
Absolutely.
And this is also a big thing to do with the diffusion of innovation theory and the natural resistance that you'll get to kind of enforce change. And so finding those people that are willing to get it going, it will grow from there, right?
Yeah, and I think willing, so maybe another virtue, so willingness, open mind, And then maybe it tied into willingness, but I noticed with mobbing, there's a lot of experimentation. Mm-hmm. And so willingness to change things, you know what I mean? I've interacted with some people who are like, I want my procedure and I'm going to follow it every day and nothing's going to be different. Mm-hmm. Where with mobbing, there's a lot more, hey, let's try this today. Let's try this. Let's try that. And I think willingness to experiment and innovate, I think, and to be get good at that change process, right? So we've talked about before with the Satir change model, and get good at that process of trying something new, having courage, it going well or it not going well, right? And being okay with failure sometimes.
Well, and I think that, you know, just to kind of go on top of that, I think that those could exist alongside each other. I have seen mobs where no one in that mob wanted to change anything. They just wanted to just produce and keep producing. And it was like, that's okay. But as soon as they got a new team member that wanted to change things, then it was a big Satir change model. But I think the main thing is that if you have people that want to stay the same, get them together with the other people that want to stay the same. And if you have people that want to experiment, get them together with the people that want to experiment. And then naturally over time, I think the diffusion of innovation theory will take care of itself, because either one group or the other will see. But a lot, you know, I like the idea of many mobs in the same space, because you can kind of treat it as an evolutionary algorithm a little bit. You can say these many test cases are all kind of forming new habits, and they are sharing between each other, and for every epoch of the evolution, you can kind of see practices that are really good spreading to other mobs, and practices that are not very effective kind of fading into obscurity. And so I think diversity would be a virtue, diversity within mobs and between mobs. And so this idea of saying, like, this mob experiments a lot, I don't want to have a whole bunch of mobs that experiment a lot. I would like to have a gradient of experimentation across many mobs, because you'd want to be exploring the local minima and optima, as well as trying some of the far out there stuff.
Nice.
I would propose diversity as in all things, really.
Nice.
As a virtue.
Diversity in all things.
I'm curious about how that would work somewhere where maybe not all the teams mob, or, you know, how do you get that cross-pollination to occur? If, you know, there are teams that are siloed, or if there are teams, you know, some momming, some not. Yeah. And one of the things I would really like to encourage is cross-pollination, just in general, through the community, through these workshops, is get people who are just curious enough to where it opens something up where they want to go experience more things at other places.
So I can talk a little bit about that in my mind. So I'm a big fan of evolutionary algorithms, machine learning, all this other stuff. And one thing that I model off of evolutionary algorithms or genetic algorithms in our in some of the systems that we've created and I argue for. And so first of all, I guess an evolutionary algorithm or genetic algorithm kind of models Darwinian evolution over time. And so you have a population, and then that population is more fit or less fit. The more fit are promoted forward and then recombined in a way that then produces the next generation. So if you take that, then that idea and just say, like, each of these individuals are kind of going off and doing their own thing, and they're producing more or producing less, or they're tweaking some metric that with their experimentation. The main thing that the evolutionary algorithm does is it says, for this epoch, for these 50 members of this population, we're going to compare them all at one point. And so a way to do that is to just bring it back to a share of some kind. So a couple of ways that we do these things. One is we do lightning talks. Everybody needs to do lightning talks throughout the year. And so the lightning talks can end up about technologies that only their mob is using, but not other mobs are using. The other piece of it, so that's everybody gets back together, talks about things that they're doing in some way, presenting to each other things that they're doing in some way, and then going back and having an opportunity to experiment or not, depending on the diffusion of innovation of that theory, that piece. Another one is we have a longer learning session period at the end of the day on Fridays. And so before that, we do a check-in of what is everybody learning right now. And so that's another form where you have like, hey, this really helped me, and I've been researching it, and it's proving to be really good for our mob, and so I'm learning more about it. Maybe everybody else should try it too. So I think the key thing there is getting everybody together. So it's okay to have people mobbing and not mobbing. There are a couple of companies that I hear about where it's just optional one way or another. I know of one company that hires whole mobs or not, and then once they're hired on as a mob, they can choose whether or not they want to work solo or not. And so the interview is like six people, and all six people are hired or all six people are not hired, but there's no in between. and then they onboard, and then they can decide how they work. And so just some really cool stuff out there. But like the main thing is that I think in those spaces, everybody gets together and says, so some people might be arguing for the idea that, hey, working solo is really great and this is why, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is the evolution, the fundamental aspects of evolution need to be there, which is, you know, everybody goes and does their own thing, iterates for a while, comes back and shares. Everybody goes there, does their own thing, iterates for a while, comes back and shares. And then you get this kind of, you just need a way for, in the diffusion of innovation theory, there's kind of the chasm where it's like between early adopters and early majority, there's a split. And I think the main thing is how do you make it more likely for something to cross the chasm in the innovation theory?
Nice. Yeah. Another thing we've been doing lately is the open spaces. So an internal open space can be really simple. So there's a whole format to do open space. If you haven't heard them, we'll put in the show notes. But it's a great way for people, everyone shows up at the beginning, and then, you know, people can host sessions or attend sessions, and it's all on the fly. And some people go do their own thing during the open space, and that's okay too. You know what I mean? So, but it just provides us an opportunity to share and learn from each other. And so I think, and even workshops like you're doing are a great way for that cross-pollination. And maybe there's an internal version of that someone could host, right? You know, and so.
Yeah, there's a couple of meetups I'm a part of that actually have a, there's a whole section just dedicated to problems. And so it's like problems, then presentation, and then show me something cool. I got that from the Tech Immersion Group in San Diego. And what's really great about that is that everybody just starts out with like, so you might just say, if people are mobbing and having problems, let's just talk about that now with each other. And then people seek advice and things like that. That's been really a positive thing.
How long do the open sessions last? Usually, in terms of hours or days?
Yeah, I think our last one was 2 hours. I think we've done them for 3 hours, too.
Okay.
So you only can do a couple sessions, but...
Two sessions, half an hour each, 8 spaces. People just go out and then talk about the things that they have for about 30 people.
Right.
Yeah. And it works pretty well. But you can scale it up or scale it down from there, just based on the normal open space rules. But there's no reason that you couldn't take the full day open space format and compress it down to 2 hours. We've been doing that every quarter for a while now.
Yeah.
And it's where, Austin's right. It works very well for that sort of share.
Cool. Well, I think we're coming up on our time box. Before we close out, is there anything you'd like to share or end with?
No, just keep mobbing and keep coming to workshops, making workshops.
How do people find you if they want to join your workshops?
So they can find me on Agile PDX on Meetup in Portland. If you sign up for that organization on Meetup, I usually post the mob programming workshops 2 weeks ahead of the event. So 2 weeks before the second Tuesday, I'll open up RSVPs every time. And I always tweet at Ceridium. Nice. And always post when those workshops are opening.
So even if you're from out of town, you can sign up for it and just attend one if you
want
to.
If you want, if you're in Portland, come by.
Fantastic.
All right, right on. Well, with that, like and subscribe, and please share with anybody you feel like this would help or inspire to internally or externally start building the mob programming community or just the community in general. So thanks for listening. Until next time, have a good one.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.